Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course, we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being because we have with us on the line Ron Brown, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in America, indeed what's going on in the world financially. And certainly I want you to know Ron is a supporter of Radio Liberty, and we really appreciate his willingness to come on with us and to help us as well as we try to reach out across America with the information you're not going to get elsewhere. Now, America is in real trouble financially, but everything is being done to allay the apprehension of the American people so you won't understand what's really going on until it's too late and the American people have been impoverished. I've read an article recently in the Wall Street Journal written by a Mr. Laffer, who was sorely critical of the people who were concerned because the dollar was dropping. And his point he made was, well, the dollar may have dropped. Yes, it may have dropped 20 or 30 or 40 or maybe even 50%, but we shouldn't worry about that because, of course, the dollar will not deteriorate to nothing. It's got to stop at some point, and at that point, our products will be more competitive throughout the world. Our economy will begin to boom again because now we can begin to produce things more competitively with the rest of the world, and we'll get back to a balance. Well, that really sounds very logical and very good, and I can assure you the dollar will drop to nothing. It may end up being worth maybe a hundred-thousandth of what it is. Recently, over in Turkey, they revalued the currency by taking about six zeros off the value. You could buy a good loaf of bread there for a million lira, and now they've taken away six zeros. And the dollar didn't drop, the lira didn't drop to nothing. It just dropped to about one millionth of its former value, and the middle class was wiped out. Certainly one of my favorite commentators is a man named Paul Craig Roberts. And I just wanted to read briefly from one of his recent editorials. Here's what he said, and talking about how China is destroying the American economy. China's currency pegged to the U.S. dollar prevents correction of the U.S. trade imbalance and imperils the U.S. dollar's role as a reserve currency of the world. In the post-World War II period, the dollar took over the reserve currency role from the British pound because the supremacy of U.S. manufacturing guaranteed U.S. trade surpluses. The British pound lost its role due to its debt of two world wars, loss of its empire, a rundown industrial base, and a socialist attack on business in the United Kingdom. The reserve currency conveys unique advantages to the favored country. As the reserve currency of the world, the United States dollar is guaranteed a high level of demand. Foreign central banks hold their reserves in dollars, and countries are building dollars for their oil imports, which requires other countries to buy dollars with their currencies. As the reserve currency fulfills the needs, in addition to the functions of a domestic currency, the favored country can hemorrhage debt for a protracted period on a scale that would promptly wreck any other country's currency. And this advantage is a two-edged sword because it permits the reserve country to behave irresponsibly by running large trade and budget deficits. But when the tide turns against the reserve currency, its exchange value collapses. And I fear, ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly what is going to happen in America. And we're going to see the impoverishment of the middle class here as people begin to get out of the dollar. It's already beginning to happen, and we'll be talking more about that when we return. Well, our guest this evening is Ron Brown. Hi, Ron. How are you doing?
Good to be with you again, Dr. Stan.
Well, it's always good to have you. And, of course, I'd like to get your views on what I was just reading about. The idea that there's just no way that we're going to be able to correct our trade imbalance by dropping the value of the dollar. As long as the Chinese currency is pegged to the American dollar, we can drop our currency, and they're going to drop their currency, and we're not going to solve much of anything.
Especially the fact that since we've sent all of our jobs and we've exported our jobs overseas, if you don't produce anything, it's kind of hard to get the balance back, the trade back in balance.
Well, not only that, of course, but it's not just our jobs we're sending overseas, we're sending our factories overseas. We no longer have an industrial base. Goodyear, for instance, has just announced it's moving all of its tire-producing facilities out of this country. It can sell here, but it can produce them over in China, or can produce them in Malaysia, or anywhere it wants to in the world, far cheaper than it can here. As factory after factory, as business after business leaves the United States, why, of course, the very foundation of our manufacturing is gone. We may be able to buy products cheaply, but an awful lot of people aren't going to have any money to buy those products with. And when the Chinese finally cut their currency loose from the American dollar, why, the price of things are going to go up. And we're going to find going to the Walmart's going to be like going to, one of the major high-end department stores, and nobody's going to be able to afford to buy.
That's right. You know, for the last 25 years or so, I think what allowed us to get in the jam we're in is that the whole world was desperate to trade with us. We were the reserve currency. And so they were all orchestrating their currencies lower versus the dollar, which gave the illusion that our dollar was very strong. It wasn't in the international markets, but it was all artificial. And so for 20 years, as the dollar went stronger and stronger and stronger, prices in America were very cheap because we were importing everything. So we didn't have the perception of inflation in terms of prices rising. And, of course, that's an artificial phenomenon that can only go so far. And once it peaked out, now the other shoe's about to drop, because since the dollar is now dropping against every currency in the world and we're importing everything, then the cost of imported goods is going to start to skyrocket. And that's when people will suddenly wake up to what's happening to them.
Well, I think the significant thing is that what the average person doesn't understand is the dollar has dropped 50% in relationship to the euro in the last 3 or 4 years. Dropped 50% in relationship to the euro in the last 3 or 4 years. And, of course, since we're not buying things from Europe, we're buying it from China. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Ron Brown. And I was simply pointing out that there is no way that we are going to be able to correct our trade problems and our trade imbalance with China as long as China pegs its currency to the American dollar. We drop our dollar, China drops their yuan. We drop our dollar, China drops their yuan. And so the trade imbalance stays just exactly as it has been in the past. The idea is, oh, well, we're going to be able to trade more cheaply with Europe. But Europe's going to find a way of not draining themselves. Certainly, if Europe doesn't allow that to happen, why, we're going to get a trade advantage on them. And they're not going to allow that to happen. They're going to look after their own interests, unlike the people who control our economy, who are more intent upon redistributing our wealth and sending our factories overseas. It's almost as if the people who control our economy have a death wish. Their dedication, of course, is not to preserving America or the living class standards of the middle class of this country. Their dedication is this globalist idea, this idea of redistributing the wealth of the United States throughout the rest of the world. And when once China and the other countries break their relationship to the dollar and the value of their currency goes up, suddenly all of their products are going to be much more expensive. We're going to see rampant inflation in the United States. And as I commented just a moment ago, going to Walmart won't be like going to a place where you can buy all these things so cheaply. Everything will go up in price, and people certainly will not be able to buy, especially those people who no longer have jobs. They're even talking now in Washington, D.C., about the real necessity of having to cut the benefits in Social Security. Why? Because there just isn't enough money, and they can't keep running up debt because they have to pay interest on the debt. The good days are over, as far as I'm concerned. I think that the leaders know that. They just don't want the American people to learn that, at least not for a little bit longer. So, Ron, my understanding is that many of the other countries are beginning to get out of dollars. In fact, I've heard that even drug dealers in Russia and the average citizen in China is trying to dump American dollars and get into a currency that is not losing its value so rapidly. What have you heard?
I'm hearing exactly the same thing. It's just, it'll happen in a gradual way, at least in the early stages. Because keep in mind, and this is the way I try to explain it to people, for 20 years, or actually 50 years, since the U.S. has been the world's reserve currency, the whole world has been collecting and operating in dollars. So it's impossible for them to just walk away from it. If the dollar collapsed overnight, then it would send the whole world into a black hole. So even our worst enemies have to be very careful the way they get out of the dollar. They're doing it very gradually. And the way I see it, the whole world is jockeying for position to, one, disengage from their over-dependence on America for trade. And, of course, as we send our jobs and our plants and our technology overseas, they're the ones that are creating the new wealth. So as the Chinese and the Indian and the rest of the world develops the wealth of their people, then they will have the markets and we will be kind of left out. Because right now we're still buying things, but we're buying it on empty credit. And the second thing they have to do is slowly, gradually dump their dollars. But as they do that, and if you look at a chart of the dollar, it just keeps ratcheting lower. And it'll come down until it looks like it's about to become a panic, and then all of a sudden it'll rally for 2 or 3 months, and then it'll top out and start back down to new lows. And I think that's going to continue for the foreseeable future. But what it amounts to is that the central banks of the world, I think, are orchestrating the demise of the dollar, and they come to its rescue at certain points to keep it from getting out of control to the downside.
Well, I think it's very interesting that China is going up into Canada, talking about buying up some of the large mineral deposits there, talking about buying up the shale oil deposits up there so they can funnel that oil into their economy, which will mean it won't be available to fuel our economy. And, of course, we're dependent upon oil. China's dependent upon oil, but they've got the dollars to buy up those shale oil deposits, and increasingly America doesn't. Even more interesting is that China has even begun to enter negotiations to buy up Unocal, one of America's largest corporations. But you see, China has, last year they had $100 billion in dollars that they got. They don't want to hold them in dollars because the dollar is declining in value. They want to put it into something tangible. They're talking about buying up Unocal. Whether they'll buy it up or not, I don't know. But as they begin to buy up more and more major corporations, then the profits of those corporations will no longer stay in America. They will be going overseas. And, of course, right now, a lot of American corporations are building products for the American market. But those American corporations are building products for the American market over in China. And, of course, when those corporations make products for the Chinese, why, of course, those dollars aren't going to come back here to strengthen our economy. They're going to stay there. And the average American has no idea that America is moving from being a first world nation to being a second world, towards ultimately being a third world nation, because there is a master plan. I believe it's laid out in something called the Earth Charter. Anybody can pick it up off the internet, or if they have not don't have access to the internet, they can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Just ask for a copy of the Earth Charter. We'll send it to you. Read point 10. It says, redistribute the wealth within nations and between nations. Redistribute the wealth within nations and between nations. Who wrote this? Why, Gorbachev, who hates America, who's a lifelong communist, would destroy our economy. Maurice Strong, who's a Canadian, employed by the people of great wealth. He's the man who really controls the United Nations. He's the Assistant Secretary General in charge of development of the UN. And, of course, Kofi Annan is simply a front man for him. And Stephen Rockefeller. These three wrote the Earth Charter, the new Ten Commandments. It's kept in the Ark of Hope. It is the plan for the world, and its purpose is to destroy the economy of the United States. Because, of course, why else would Gorbachev be involved? Gorbachev is a lifelong communist. The purpose of communism, of course, is to create a world government with a communist in charge. And it almost seems like our government is intent upon helping him. So what do you see happening now, Ron? We're looking at the gold and silver markets. And you would expect, as the dollar has plunged so far, that the gold and silver would be moving up. Why are gold and silver moving down?
Well, they are moving up, but it's an ebb and a flow. Whenever the central banks, if you'll notice the last 3 or 4 weeks, in fact, since before the election, the dollar went into a tailspin. The dollar index was somewhere around 88 to 89, and it just kept ratcheting lower, and it got down to right at the 80 level. 80 is a very, very critical support level on the dollar that goes back years. And so when it hit 80, that's when the bankers, in my opinion, come in to the rescue, stabilize the dollar, and now we're into a dollar rally. And as the dollar is rallying, then that takes some of the pressure off of the gold market. And of course, as you know, I'm totally convinced, and if you look, there's so much evidence to prove this, that certain bankers are intent on suppressing the price of gold and silver, and the silver market in particular. They do it at the futures market by simply selling unlimited amounts of paper silver on contract, and that forces the price of silver down. And that's what we're seeing. We've seen it happen, what, 2 or 3 times since this bull market started 4 years ago. So
what you're really saying is that this whole market is totally manipulated by people of great wealth who do not want people to believe that they may gain by having something tangible in their possession. In other words, as long as gold and silver are kept very low, people won't be concerned about it. They'll use paper dollars. They certainly wouldn't want to buy something and lose money on it. That's why they've artificially kept gold and silver down for such a long period of time, because that forces us to use the paper money that the bankers create out of nothing. There is nothing behind the currency other than the integrity of our government and of our banking system. And our banking system, in my estimation, is totally bankrupt.
Well, you know, people ask me all the time, why would they suppress the price of gold and silver? It's just a commodity. And, of course, gold and silver are barometers of confidence in the paper system. And as you just pointed out, the paper system is nothing but a confidence game in that it has nothing back in it. And the only thing that gives it any credibility is the people's faith in the issuer, which is the government. So if gold is the barometer of confidence, and if you can hold down the barometer, suppress the price of gold and silver, then the impression is that everything's okay in the monetary system, which, of course, is not the case.
Well, I think what would be so interesting, you know, we've heard recently that the federal government is going to send $350 million into the area of Southeast Asia to help the victims of the tsunami there. Now, where is the money going to come from? We don't have the money. In other words, last year we borrowed $600 billion just to pay our bills. $412 billion is what they admit the national debt was, and then they stole all the excess that went into Social Security and Medicare. So, and they simply put in an IOU saying, "Well, maybe we'll pay this back sometime." But they don't. The government doesn't have any money. The only money it has is what it takes from us by force and taxation, what it borrows from future generations. And, of course, printing money is the way that you really can get around all of this, but that leads to inflation. The whole system collapses. So you simply borrow from the future. So we're going to give $350 million to the people in Southeast Asia that our government doesn't have, that they're going to borrow from future generations, or hope that they can certainly do away with their obligation to pay off the debt by simply inflating it away. And I think that that's exactly where they're going. I don't think they have any intention of paying off our over $7 trillion in debt. They'll simply inflate it away in the process, of course, destroy the savings, the annuities, the bonds, the pension funds of all of the people of this country who've had the audacity to put their faith in government rather than in freedom and liberty. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Ron Brown, and we're going to certainly welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But there's no instance when a nation has gone onto a fiat money system and that nation has survived, and I fear that there are people who would love to see America fall. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown. And Ron, of course, one of the interesting things was this report out of Mexico that the governors of all the various states down there had put in a request to the parliament asking them to monetize silver and begin actually minting silver coins and return to a concept, at least in Mexico, where money had real value rather than this debt currency that has been used to create tremendous prosperity in the United States, at least tremendous prosperity for the upper class, but of course it's going to eventually impoverish the people here. What do you take of that? Because I certainly have not read anything in any of the newspapers about this, which I think is one of the most important statements and important things that's happened in the last 50 years.
Well, it's going to be an interesting battle because you better believe that the Central Bank of Mexico, which is basically controlled by the same people that control our central banks, are going to fight it tooth and nail, and they'll try to ignore it and put it off. And so you've got the governors of each of the states. By the way, there's, I think, several governors in the U.S. who's making the same plea to our Congress to try to get us to go into some type of silver standard or whatever. So it's going to be a battle between the all-powerful central banks against the people, which the governors would represent, in my opinion. So I'd be surprised if they ever get it through, but it would sure solve a lot of Mexico's problems, wouldn't it?
Well, you have to have a solid currency if you're going to have a prosperous society. And, of course, Mexico had their revolution really back in the 1930s. It was a communist revolution. That's why Trotsky went to Mexico, because it was a communist country. We've never talked about it as such, but the communist country they had was typical communism. They had an all-powerful ruling class, and everybody else was impoverished. That was the end of the communist revolution in Mexico, and that's exactly what happened after the communist revolution in Russia. An all-powerful ruling class and everybody else impoverished and kept in line by a powerful military and by terror and by assassinations and simply by imprisoning anybody who opposed the government. And for, well, what, 50 years, why they had a one-party system there. Now they have a two-party system. I believe both sides are controlled by the same people, but it makes things look a little bit better. The Mexican people, I don't think, have caught on to the fact that they've done to Mexico just about what they've done here. Two political parties, both heading the same way, both controlled by the same people, both have a different line, but the reality is that both are dedicated to globalism, ever larger government, ever more massive debts, and the American people really aren't much smarter than the Mexican people, are they?
No, in fact, you know, it's such a contrast when you look at Mexico with all the natural resources they have. They just lived in total poverty compared to our system, which for many years was based on freedom, and you know, and we had all the wealth that was created by a private enterprise that they didn't have in Mexico. And Mexico has been a slave to our corporate giants here that can go down there and just fleece them for everything, whether it's the silver, the oil, or whatever.
Well, of course, the thing is that's because the people there are so poor that they have to work for really whatever salary they can get. I fear that it may not be too long before we have that sort of a situation here. They're even talking, there was an article the other day, they're talking even about having to cut Social Security benefits for all the new people coming along because there's just not going to be enough money to pay Social Security benefits here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and we're simply talking about what's happening financially. And if you have any questions or comments, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And certainly, Ron, as you look and see now, of course, the gold and silver have been dropping over here for the last 3 weeks or so. Gold was up to 450. I saw, about 422 today, something like that. And silver, being up to $8, over $8, is now down, to six? Well, anyway, it's in the low $6. So they've they've really done a tremendous job of driving the price of gold and silver down. Don't you think this is all manipulation by the bankers to prevent people from getting the idea that our currency is increasingly becoming worthless?
Oh, absolutely. One thing that people follow to kind of show the manipulation of the market is something called the Commitment of Traders Report, and that comes off of the futures market on the COMEX. And it just kind of puts the traders in different brackets, and there's a bracket that includes eight or less traders, and those are what we call the bullion bankers or the commercial banks, and that would include maybe Morgan Chase or Goldman Sachs or some of the other international bankers. And their total short position right before this crash was approaching 600 million ounces of silver short. In other words, they had sold contracts for close to 600 million ounces of silver, but they don't have 1 ounce of silver to deliver. So it's just a way of selling silver, even though it's on paper, and you just keep selling till you force the price down, because on the other side of the equation you have some speculator who's gambling on very high leverage, let's say 10-to-1 leverage, and they're betting that silver is going to go up, and the international bankers are coming in to take the other side of that bet to bet it's going to go down. So they have an unlimited checkbook, and whenever they choose, they can just start selling until they force the price down. And once you're on leverage 10-to-1 and the price goes against you, then you end up getting what's called a margin call. That is, you have to put up more money, or they're going to sell out your contract. So once you start closing out a long contract, you have to sell, and that just creates an avalanche, or margin masker is what it's called, and the market just comes flushing down, and that's all we've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
But, of course, this is all manipulation. I mean, in other words, they're offering to sell silver they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this is something that's not a legitimate thing. And if we had legitimate markets, why, certainly the SEC would clamp down on them. But it almost seems like the SEC is working hand in glove with these chiselers and manipulators.
Yeah, it's kind of like a kangaroo court. You know, the very people you're calling on to police it are the ones that are in bed with one side. And so they just kind of turn their head the other way. You know, it's the equivalent, when you look at the commercial banks that are short in the silver market, they're generally going up against what's called the tech funds, and these are the hedge funds that may be betting on silver to go up. But they're just a mutual fund that has limited resources, and it's the equivalent of you and I saving our money for 6 months or a year and getting $10,000 and hopping on a plane and going to Vegas and saying, I want a house game. You know, you're going up against the house that has $50 million to go against your $10,000. You're not going to win that bet, are you? But the problem is, the people that keep trading the funds, they go back home and lick their wounds, collect a little more, and then go right back to Vegas and say, well, I want another house game. And they just keep playing the same game over and over, and they just keep getting their hat handed to them, or head handed to them on a platter.
But, of course, if another number of people would actually go into the market and take delivery on the silver,
exactly,
there isn't any silver there to offer for delivery.
Exactly, and that's when the manipulation will come to a screeching halt. If these hedge funds would just take 10% of their money and buy real silver, then they would. There's so little silver out there relative to the amount of money that could go into it. It would just take a very, very small percentage of these big institutions taking delivery of silver, and there just wouldn't be enough silver to go around.
How much silver is there really? Do we have any idea how much there really is? We know that Warren Buffett bought 130 million ounces of silver back in 1997. He's still sitting on it because he thinks it's going to go through the roof. Do we have any idea how much silver there really is available in the market today? Because we've been hearing for many months that they were running out.
Well, first place, he bought 130 million ounces under contract on the futures market, and then started to take delivery. He only took delivery of 87 million ounces, and that was forcing the price up. And that was in early 1998, is when silver went to over $8 because he was taking delivery of silver off the market.
Hold that. We'll talk about that when we get back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Ron Brown. And Ron, you were telling us about Warren Buffett and what he's been doing. You wanted to pick up that story?
It was interesting how that happened. Silver had been in the doldrums for all these years, you know, starting back in 80, and it was trading around 350 an ounce in mid-97, I guess. And then all of a sudden in October, November, the price of silver started to rise, and it got to 5 and then 6, and it kept rising. And the rumors started to circulate that there was some big player in the silver market, but no one knew who it was. And about February the 3rd is when it peaked. Silver just kept going up, and it peaked out at $8 that day, and that's when Warren Buffett came out and says, "Yes, folks, I'm the player in the game." He said, "I followed everything that Bunker Hunt did back in the 70s. I know everything he did right, and I know everything he did wrong. Me, I just think silver has no place to go but up. So what I did was buy 128 million ounces of silver on the futures market, and then I started to take delivery, and I've taken delivery of 87 million ounces, but if it'll help to prevent a panic, I won't force delivery of the other, 44 million ounces?" And that was about the last we heard of it, and then all of a sudden silver tops out and it goes back down. My guess is that Mr. Buffett was called on the carpet and encouraged, well, I'm sure they have their methods, to back off of the silver market. And, you know, it came out a few years later when Enron went under. This was a rumor that was circulating. There's never been any confirmation of it, but I suspect there's some truth to it, that Warren Buffett was using the same commodity broker out of London that Enron was using, and that Warren Buffett had leased 50 million ounces of his silver to Enron. So I think what happened is that Warren Buffett was pressured to lease that physical silver back into the market. So now he's probably sitting there holding a paper position in silver with no insurance that the silver will ever get repaid, which it will not get repaid.
Well, do we have any idea how much there is out there? Because, you know, certainly, consume 100 million ounces every year, or what?
Well, we consume about 100 million ounces more than we produce.
Okay.
So we're eating away at that glut of silver that was out there after the 60s when we demonetized silver, and we had billions of ounces above ground, but every year we're just chipping away at that surplus.
Hold that thought there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm asking, of course, Ron Brown, how much silver there really is out there in the market. At one time, there was 10 billion ounces. That was after we demonetized silver back in the 60s, and the government then began selling off all the silver, and, of course, a lot of it disappeared into private coffers, because the coins that you could get, you know, at the supermarket were worth more than the face value of the currency. As the currency began to fall, I think they call it Gresham's Law. Good coinage drives out bad coinage. And, of course, now none of your coins have any real value. They're all made of base metals. At one time, our coinage was in silver. And, of course, when we had a solid gold and silver-backed currency, why we had a prosperous economy. And then, of course, they create this artificial economy by creating a paper money economy, and this is what they did in ancient Greece. And they, of course, didn't have paper money at those times, but they had artificial coinage, and they did the same thing in ancient Rome. And it's happened time and time again, whether in the early 1700s with John Law in France, or here in the United States, with their continental dollars during the Revolutionary War, or then in France in 1789, when they created tremendous prosperity simply by printing money with nothing behind it. And, of course, this is what's happened today. This is why we have such a prosperous economy, or had such a prosperous economy. They were able to just make money out of nothing, simply print it, put it into circulation, and then, of course, rather than having inflation here, since everybody else in the world was using American dollars as a reserve currency, most other countries bought up our debt and held the dollars as their reserve currency. But now that the dollar has fallen 50%, countries throughout the world, they don't want to lose 50% of their holdings. They're trying to get out of the dollars. The drug dealers throughout the world are trying to get out of dollars. The Russian government's trying to get out of dollars. The oil countries are trying to get out of dollars. Even the people in China who've held dollars religiously for many years are getting out of dollars and into their yuan, into their own currency, because at least they feel that that will be stable with some gold backing when the American dollar becomes useless and continues down. And when everybody starts getting out of dollars, heaven help the people who are in fixed dollar assets in this country. So, but basically we were talking about, you know, how much silver there really is out there, Ron. Do we have any idea how much
silver? Well, there have been a lot of studies, and everyone comes up with a slightly different. Now, what the silver that you can identify that's in the warehouses and could be easily delivered to the market on a moment's notice, the biggest storage by far is the COMEX. And they quote that they have 107 million ounces of silver in inventory. But that's not the whole story. There's two farms of silver that's stored there. One is registered and one is eligible. If you and I decided to buy, for example, 10,000 ounces of silver or take delivery of 10,000 ounces off our contracts, we could choose to store it on the COMEX because it's easier to let us keep it stored there than for us to worry about it. Well, that silver is ours. It may be showing up on their inventory figures, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's available to the market, because you and I may not be wanting to sell our silver till it hits 20, 30, 40, 50. So you have to ask what is the registered, and that is the amount of silver that's available for delivery. Now, the COMEX, as of last week, somewhere around 42 million ounces. So, you know, when you go from billions of ounces out there to only 40-something million ounces, it's in deliverable form. Now, I'm sure there's lots of silver in India and in China and places like that, and there's lots of silver in silverware sets and so forth, but what price would it take to get that silver into the market? And I would suggest it's not going to come to the market at 5 or 6 or 10 or even 15. So we really don't have very much silver out there, especially when you put it into perspective of how much paper money has been created. Just as a comparison, in 1980, silver went to $52 an ounce. The national debt was less than $1 trillion. As you've spoken, you know, we're at least $7 billion. They just raised the debt ceiling to 8.2, that's a billion, I mean trillion. And then when you get in all these unfunded liabilities and the private debt, the corporate debt, which has grown even faster than the government debt, you know, you're talking literally maybe $100 trillion easily in the monetary system. And yet we're down to maybe, let's say there's 100 million ounces of silver. Heck, let's be generous and say there's more silver than we know there is. There's a billion ounces of silver out there. Well, at $6 an ounce, that's $6 billion to buy all the silver in the world. And so you're talking about a monetary system that has exploded over the last 25 years. And yet we've been consuming the above-ground silver, so there's less silver above ground every year. So we probably have at most 25% as much silver above ground as we had 25 years ago, and yet you have literally 10 times as much paper money to chase it. So you got to ask the question, if silver went to $50 back in 1980, what's going to happen this time when the flight out of the dollar accelerates? And we can see it happening daily.
Well, no, you of course, are in the coin business. Is it still possible to get bags of silver coins, 90% silver coins?
So far, so good. Now,
where are they all coming from? Has somebody got them all stored? Have they had them stored here for years, or what?
You know, I think probably the only silver that's really coming into the market, I see it in my business, is the people who've lost their jobs or are having trouble making ends meet, and they're having to fall back on their savings to keep paying the rent and so forth. And so once that starts to dry up, or is what I call the Lilliputian revolution, and that is when the little folks finally wake up to the inevitable destruction of their dollar and they see the inflation eating away at their purchasing power, and especially their savings are not keeping up, then people start to seek the refuge of gold and silver. and that will accelerate over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years. And as the flight into silver out of paper money reaches a certain point, then it'll overwhelm the available supplies. I don't care who's dumping. And at that point, the manipulators will lose control.
All right. Well, Chris, now you actually, would you like to get your telephone number out there? Because Ron has written, I think, a very, very good analysis of what's happening economically. I came out about a year ago, but it certainly nothing has really changed as far as the economic forces at work in our society. And do you want to get your telephone number out? Because I know you'll send copies of that report out to anybody who'd like to buy it.
Sure, anyone would like to call me, my number.
They don't have to buy it. You give it to them, don't you?
Would I say buy it? I'm
no,
sorry.
I said
anyone
it.
Anyone would like to get a copy of it. My number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Tony, who's calling here. And, of course, hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good, Dr. Stan. Yeah, hi.
You have a question or comment?
Well, you're talking about how much silver is in the world.
Right. How much, what's your take on it? Because I know you follow that very closely, too.
Well, let me just say that Ted Butler just had his newest newsletter come out, and he went to the department of the United States Geological, or whatever it is, measures mineral deposits.
Right.
And anyway, he got the bear figures from the U.S. government, which isn't biased or anything like that, hopefully. On how much known mineral deposits of all different metals are, as far as for on the entire planet, and there was like the amount of aluminum, for example, there was like 400 years supply, and copper there was like 50 years, and gold was there was like 20. All the different metals. The one metal that has the least known deposits, you know, known on the planet was silver. And as far as all known worldwide supplies, according to the United States Geological Department, and this is on Ted Butler's website, it's brand new, it's right on there, was 17 years. About 15 billion ounces that are known to be residing in the crust of the planet, which sounds like a lot, except when you figure that the industrial usage worldwide is somewhere between 800-900 million ounces a year. At that rate in 15-17 years, there will be no silver left on the planet.
I think he was saying it was about 14 years left, didn't it? Is that what he said?
I think it was 14 for silver and 17 for gold.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, of course, that silver is not only a monetary metal, it is really an industrial metal, too, because silver is being used for so many things. It's very, very conductive. It's used in computers and in so many electronic functions, as well as in photography and so other things. So they have to have silver ready to keep an industrialized society going.
But then just on a planetary scale, I mean, yes, there's like 100 million ounces, 104 million in the COMEX, and there's like 42 million of those are available. And you probably, like the Canadian, there's this one fund up in Canada, the Canadian Fund, I think it's called.
Central Fund.
They've been a heavy investor in just silver and gold, and they purchase it for their own fund, and then they sell shares. And I think they're up to like 30 million ounces now. Their last delivery of 5-6 million ounces was, it took them like 9 months to get it from the COMEX.
In other words, COMEX doesn't want to let their silver go.
No, and the last time they had a delivery problem, it was with platinum, when they had a big shortage of that, and that's what pushed the price of platinum way up into the, you know, $800 range. And I thought it was interesting that the U.S. Geological, they say that there's, I believe it was 200 years worth of platinum to be mined.
Right.
I was kind of surprised about that one.
I was too.
And I just thought that was a pretty interesting, you know, coming from the government.
All right. Well, I appreciate so much your calling. Anything else you want to bring out, Tony?
Well, that's Ted Butler research, if anybody ever wants to check it out.
Okay. Just go to Google, type in Ted Butler research, and you'll come up with it.
Yeah, it's a new study. If anybody's interested in it, they'll probably find it interesting.
Well, I think that we're on the edge of some big things, certainly monetarily. I think that they're doing everything they can to get the American people to think that everything's going to be just fine. But the only country that's really standing behind the dollar and trying to support it besides our own people are the Japanese.
Yeah.
And they're doing everything they can to keep the dollar from falling because they need to keep the dollar, they need to keep their currency a week so that we will buy their products. If their currency gets too strong, why, we'll quit buying their products and start buying Chinese products, and then they'll have real problems. They already have real problems. They've been in an economic depression for 10 years.
Actually, since about 89. I think it's a little longer than that.
Right.
You mentioned earlier, Dr. Stan, about how we're going to be sending our currency or money, whatever you want to call it, over for aid victims, and we don't have it and all that. But in a way, I kind of disagree with you a little bit on that. I understand your point, but the reason I kind of disagree with that is because that our country supposedly has about 260 million ounces of gold stashed away. I seriously doubt it, but I mean that's what they have on the books.
Well, they audited back in 1955. I think is the last time they audited.
Yeah, they won't audit it again because I don't think there's anything to audit.
Exactly.
All right, well, what's your point, Mike?
Well, my point is, supposedly there's a monetary base there to back up the dollar. I mean, I think if you walk down the street and talk to people, most people would think, oh, yeah, there's all this gold that backs it up, even though we don't know anything. But supposedly the amount of paper money there is based on something. That's what people sort of think anyway.
Well, what is the paper money based on?
Well, it's actually nothing. It's only on the ability of the government to tax its citizens.
All right, fine. So my point, Tony, was simply that I believe in charity, and I believe people should help people, other people, but I don't think it's up to the government to help people.
Oh, no.
If the government had money of its own, fine, but the government doesn't have any money of its own.
Well,
the politicians who are voting that money are not they're not sending their money over there. They're sending our money over there because it makes them feel good to spend somebody else's money.
That's exactly what you just said, though. Because, see, like right now, if you were planning on retiring, and I know you still have at least 30 years to go.
Well, maybe even longer.
But if you have, before you retire, from working. But just say you wanted to retire today, okay, and just say you had $1 million in the bank, okay, and at today's level, you had $1 million and now you're going to retire on it, and that's it. You don't have any more income, okay. Well, 5 to 6, 7 years from now, the $1 million that you have today is only going to buy what $500,000 is,
right?
Because in 5, 6 years now, it's only going to be worth half. So by the government sending all that aid over to Indonesia and this and that and the other, they double the money supply, and what's left is only worth half. And so what they've effectively done is robbed you of half of your value, which may be 20% a year, and you're sleeping. You never even knew it. And so when they do send this aid, they're robbing the rest of us by letting those printing presses keep going.
Okay.
That's my point, and that's why I don't think... they are sending them something, because as long as they keep this deficit spending going and the printing presses going and they let the dollar fall, so every 5 to 7 years it's only half of what it was 5 or 7 years before, they've stolen half of what you have today. So it's like a 20% tax on top of everything else you pay every year.
Okay.
And that's, I think, some people might want to think about that, because you keep doing that long enough, and that's why I really believe they suppress the price of gold and silver, is because it makes it difficult to invest in something that's going to keep its value. And if people don't see the value going up, they want to put it into like something else where they might get a couple of percentage points interest that they have to pay tax on besides.
Okay, thanks very much, Tony.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, I'd like to know what Ron thinks about that.
What do you think about that, Ron?
Yeah, I agree with what he's saying. That's the confidence game we have. One, he was talking about we don't have any gold there, but they give us the perception that we have 260 million ounces of gold, so it's really a fraud. The dollar's maintaining its value on the perception that there's gold there that really isn't there. So it's a big lie.
Well, as I say, reality is usually scoffed at, and illusion is usually king, and that's really what it's all about. It's all about smoke and mirrors. As long as you can get people to believe that a piece of paper with something green printed on it is of value, why people will continue using it. But when we find out that the people of the rest of the world are getting out of dollars and suddenly we see runaway inflation here, people are going to suddenly realize that they've been cheated and that their future and certainly the future of their children has been sacrificed forever. Well, Ron, do you have a parting thought? Give that telephone number out just one more time. People would like to get in touch with you.
That's 1-800-595-0561. 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And we're going to be back in just, with Ron in just a minute. We've got, then, of course, we'll be back to wipe up the program. Not wipe up, but to finish, wrap up the program. So hang on there for just a minute. You too, Ron, please.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ron Wilson. Ron, we've got 3 minutes. What thoughts do you want to leave with our listeners tonight?
You know, when Tony was talking, he reminded me of, you probably remember Harry Hopkins back in the days of Roosevelt, and he was kind of the alter ego for Harry Hopkins, his major advisor. And he was out of the media one day at the racetrack, and I suspect he probably had a few beers, and they came for some comments, and he said, there's a new wave going across Washington. The new attitude is to tax and tax, spend and spend, elect, because the dumb fools don't know how the game is played. And so the politicians go along with this inflation process because it allows them to make promises to their constituents. And normally, if you're on a gold standard, if you promise one group something, you would have to tax the other group in order to pay for it, and that group would get you unelected the next election. So with inflation, they just spend at a deficit. They make promises to everyone. They pay off those promises with inflated money, and in effect, what they do is tax the people indirectly with inflation, and that's what Tony was talking about.
Well, I think that the day of reckoning is going to be coming very, very soon, and I don't know how soon, but I do know that certainly throughout the rest of the world, other governments are getting out of dollars as quickly as they can, but when we find that the drug dealers are getting out of dollars, we know that we're in real problems.
Right.
Well, I think that this is going to be a very, very interesting year lying before us. There's a great deal of talk about an attack on Iran to take out their nuclear facilities there, and whether we do that, whether Israel does that, I don't know. I just hope that doesn't provoke a major conflict with either Russia or China at the time. Certainly I can tell you one thing, and that is we are in the process of inflaming the anger and hostility of Muslim governments throughout the world. And of course, with that, if they want to attack us, what's the best way to attack America? The way to attack it economically. Anybody is only to go to their Google and type in Osama bin Laden, November 1st. Read what Osama bin Laden supposedly had said in that video released on November 1st. He said that we are going to destroy America economically, and we are going to create conflicts, and they will have to spend $1 million to counter what we have created with a $1 investment. And I think he may very well be right. Ron, thanks very much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you on again here real soon.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, one of the more interesting things I would hope that many of our listeners would want to read was Osama bin Laden said on the 1st of November. And you can actually go to your Google and type in Osama bin Laden, November 1st, 2004. And Osama supposedly had sent a video at that time in which he said that the best way to destroy America is economically. And we will be able to create confrontations, and they will have to send a whole army there. We'll have a half a dozen soldiers. They'll create a minor ruckus, and of course the Americans will respond, and eventually we will bankrupt them. This is how we're going to actually destroy America, is economically. And of course, everything that I see makes me believe that whether Osama bin Laden wrote this or not, I don't know. In fact, I suspect Osama bin Laden has been dead for a long period of time. But I think that as things grow worse economically, why the administration, who was ever in power, will be able to point to Osama bin Laden and say he's responsible for the problems we have. Whereas what's really responsible, of course, is our faulty economic policies. Well, if you really want to understand the basis of our economic system, we carry several books. One of them is called The Creature from Jekyll Island. That's The Creature from Jekyll Island. It's probably the single best explanation of what is going on economically in the world, the Federal Reserve System, and the way that you create money out of nothing and get people to really believe it has value. A second book would be The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Anthony Sutton. A third would be Gold for Survival by Anthony Sutton. And a fourth book would be Fiat Money Inflation in France. It was a book written well over 100 years ago about something that happened over 200 years ago. What happened in France in 1789 after the French Revolution, when they decided they were going to bring prosperity simply by printing money. So the books again, The Creature from Jekyll Island, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, Gold for Survival, and Fiat Money Inflation in France. Then there's a video called The Monopoly Men, and with the background here, you're really going to begin to understand what is really transpiring economically in the world today. Now, if you get any of these and would like copies of our our September and our October newsletters, I think that they will give you tremendous background into what's going on. And so if you'd like one of those newsletters, you can specifically request it. If you'd like to, if you get any of those products, and you could request both of the newsletters, we'd be glad to send them to you. Or you can look at them at our website at radioliberty.com. That's the September and October Radio Liberty letters. They will really give you a solid background in understanding central banking, understanding what Warren Buffett is doing, understanding what Alan Greenspan really believes, not what he says now for public consumption, but what he really believes and what he really understands. So that's the September and October Radio Liberty letters. Either get them from us or get them off the internet at radioliberty.com. And then, of course, remember that we do carry the Big Berkey products here if you're interested in getting those. We hope you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. We hope that many of you will want to get Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, wonderful videos explaining the prophetic significance of what's going on. Megiddo 1 is 2 hours and 15 minutes. Megiddo 2 is 3 hours, very professionally produced. And then to understand the spiritual component of what's going on, they sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour versions. And if you haven't seen them, you need to get them. You need to show them to your children. You need to show them to your grandchildren so they will understand the satanic background of rock and roll music. And, of course, those same dark and sinister forces are at work at the highest levels of our government today, within international banking and finance, within our great tax-exempt foundations, and our educational system, and, tragically, within our churches as well. So pray for America. Pray for revival. Please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. That number again, 1-800-544-8927. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us this evening Dr. David Kennedy, and we were to have had Jeff Green of Citizens for Safe Drinking Water, but I got a call this morning from Jeff, and he sounded sort of like a frog. He had a terrible cold, and he asked if David Kennedy could come on. And of course, I love having David Kennedy. He's one of our favorite guests. We had him on just a week ago or so talking about fluoride, but I thought this evening why we would talk about mercury, because of course Dr. David Kennedy is a dentist. He's well aware of the toxic effect of the dental fillings that they've been put into the mouths of literally millions of Americans, probably several hundred million Americans in this country have amalgam fillings. We call them silver fillings. They're not silver fillings at all. They're mercury fillings. And they leach out mercury into our bodies, into our brains, certainly pregnant women who have mercury fillings. That mercury gets into their blood system, concentrates in the minds of their child, and these are create real serious problems. So, Dr. Kennedy, you certainly are far more aware of the problems inherent in mercury and mercury fillings than I. Why don't you pick up the story and tell us a little bit about it, and how long has it been known by the dentists here in the United States that mercury fillings are a real problem?
Well, in the 1800s, 1818, isn't that quite a while ago, about 200 years, the American Society of Dental Surgeons fed their members from using what they called poison metal fillings, and that the dentist, because of greed, the desire to have a low-cost filling material, began to use mercury mixed with the fillings from coins. That was back when coins were made out of silver. And, of course, these things expanded and then broke the tooth and caused them to need crowns. They're still doing that today. But so many dentists jumped off of the bandwagon of the original dental association, the American Society of Dental Surgeons, and formed a new association called the American Dental Association that eventually the American Society of Dental Surgeons folded. And that was 1859. So, you know, 100 years, 200 years, it goes on and on, but there is no justification for implanting a time-release mercury filling in anyone's mouth.
David, do you think the average dentist today really knows the history? Do you think he really understands the danger not only to the patient but to him from mercury fillings?
Absolutely not, Stan. Is that if you and I decided to establish our own dental school, as many people did at the turn of the century and for the first 50 years of this century, that you have to be accredited by the American Dental Association. So how would you teach the truth if the people that are proving what your curriculum is are the people that at one time held the patent on the material?
And so is it still a patented material? Or?
Not anymore. It's run out, but The strongest advocates for mercury are still the American Dental Association.
All right, fine. And so it's almost like a vested interest in being wrong, because if they were to admit that they have been poisoning the people of this country for years, why, think of the litigation. Think of the, people would lose confidence in their dentist. But the average dentist really doesn't understand.
No.
We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, I remember when I first heard that there were problems with dental fillings, I thought it was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever heard. Now, at this time, of course, you know I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I don't know much about dentistry. And at that time, I knew even less about mercury. And I suppose this was about 1982, 83. I was very interested in doing acupuncture at that time. And I traveled all over the world and actually went to Europe and went to Canada. And I was getting to be a very, very accomplished auricular acupuncturist. But then some of my teachers began talking about the danger of mercury fillings. They didn't refer to them as mercury fillings, just silver fillings, and the importance of getting those out. And I can remember sort of sneering to myself, saying, that really sounds like absolute quackery. And yet, of course, then we would see people later on and had the fillings out, and a lot of some of their illnesses and some of their complaints really were dramatically better. And I can remember certainly looking back on my training when I was a very young doctor and training for orthopedics, and one of my teachers, the name was Dr. Dixon, Doug Dixon was his name, and he practiced up in Oakland. I'm sure he's gone to be with the Lord by now, but he'd been trained at the Mayo Clinic. And as an orthopedic surgeon, he'd have people come in with multiple aches and pains and problems, and he would say, well, your solution to your problem is to get rid of all of your teeth, and you'd have all their teeth pulled out, and some of the people had dramatic improvement. And, you know, I just thought, well, this is really quackery, and yet he invited us to his office. We saw the patients, and they really, they swore by it. They felt so much better, and their aches and pains and problems were ever so much better once they had their teeth out. And so I didn't know why it was. I thought maybe it had to do with low-grade infection or something of the sort. And of course, I was never about to have my teeth taken out. Looking back on that, I wonder if some of that could have been getting rid of the mercury fillings. What do you think?
I think it's about 50-50. Gum disease affects about 90% of the population, and there's a huge number of studies now showing that if you have infectious organisms in your gums, that you can find the DNA of those same organisms in your arteries, if you have a stroke, in the lesions that cause the stroke, throughout your body. When you have red stuff coming out of your gums when you're brushing, the bacteria go in, and that they end up in the circulation. So that's 50% of the problem. The other 50% is a chronic poisoning of the body with mercury. So my grandfather, you know, you talk about your old instructor, friend, and physician. And my grandfather graduated from dental school in 1898.
Hold that thought for just a moment, David, and we'll bring our stations on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking today, this evening, with Dr. David Kennedy, who is a dentist. He's a retired dentist now. He's spending his time working, certainly, with Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. He's working on the issue of trying to get the fluoride, trying to make the American people understand that we're poisoning the minds of our children, we're poisoning our adults. We're decreasing the fertility. We're attacking the thyroid. We're creating premature aging and senility. And we're creating all sorts of problems with the endocrine system and dental fluorosis and softening the bones of our people with water fluoridation. But this evening we were going to be talking about mercury. So David was simply beginning to talk about, was that your father or your grandfather?
Grandfather. Granddad graduated from dental school in 1898, University of Pennsylvania. And that one of the things he was taught before the turn of the last century was that infected gums led to infected bodies. And that, you know, to stop called the focal theory of infection, is that if you have an infected area of your body, that infection could spread from one site to another, and that was poo-pooed and discounted in the 40s and 50s and largely ignored for the next 50 years. But now that we have DNA testing and further scientific advancement, we've come back to the ideas of my grandfather that if you have infected gums, you get an infected heart. If you have infected gums, you get infected arteries. If you have infected gums, you can get an infected brain. All these things lead to stroke, heart attack, atherosclerosis is another term for it. So the ideas of the past are coming back and becoming the leading cutting edge of the future. But, you know, you were talking about people recovering from having all their teeth extracted. I don't recommend that because we can disinfect the gums now. But basically, there are two reasons for people recovering when they have their teeth extracted. One, you're taking about 750 milligrams of mercury per tooth in a filling. So depending on how many fillings you have, you're removing a huge chunk of mercury. And smooth gums are healthy gums. If you don't have any teeth, the bacteria no longer can get into your bloodstream. So dentistry has not yet embraced the idea of treating gum disease as an infection or tooth decay as an infection.
All right, well, let's talk about mercury, and maybe we can talk something about gum disease later in the program. But explain to our listeners why the mercury can get out of the tooth, because the average individual doesn't believe that just because they have dental fillings in, that they're going to get any evidence of mercury toxicity.
Well, the real problem is the education that dentists receive. Is it today in dental schools throughout California? The dentists are told that there's mercury in the filling, and it's a little tiny amount, which is not correct, and that it does not escape. Or if it does escape, it's a minute amount that's below the level of measurement. And so you can buy the equipment and measure it. You know, one of the high school students, a friend of mine, is a dentist, and his son, for his high school science project, measured the amount of mercury coming out of his classmate's breath. So, you know, is it hard to measure? Not at all. It's easy to measure with the high-tech equipment that we have today. And so, you know, they just basically lie to the students, give them false information. They look at the person at the front of the class and think that the instructor is giving them accurate information, and they go out and they misinform their patients. So the problem I see is a twofold problem. One is that we've been deceived by the dentist, and two, the dentist himself or herself has been deceived by their instructor. And that's because the way schools are accredited and dentists are licensed all comes from the same organization. And that organization has a death grip on dental education.
All right, fine. Well, let's just talk a little bit about then specifically, certainly about the situation. Now, don't people get more mercury released if they chew? Can you actually demonstrate that there's increased mercury released when you chew?
Yes, and actually you can watch the video of that on the webpage of the International Academy of All Medicine Toxicology. That's www.iaomt, and that we showed mercury fillings under half a dozen different situations where you scrape it with a pocket knife or rub it with a pencil eraser or put it in warm water or water at the same temperature as the human body. All of these things make a huge plume of mercury come off the filling. So imagine what Starbucks coffee, what is that, 160 degrees or something like that? And then that would just make a cloud that would, you know, perhaps fill the room. So, you know, the temperature, abrasion, chewing. Why does chewing gum make mercury come off the fillings? It's because when the teeth rub together, it generates a little bit of heat. Well, what if you eat hot mashed potatoes? Well, that'll do the same thing. There's nothing special about chewing. It has to do with the temperature that's generated. And that's the thing that many people, I mean, some kids chew gum 24 hours a day. I mean, you know, kids in school, you know, they got a piece of gum in there and they chomp it away. And so we showed when you put mercury fillings in sheep, that, you know, you damage the kidneys. If we put them in monkeys, that immediately the monkeys' intestines drew a whole bunch of dystrophic bacteria. How many people suffer from irritable bowel syndrome? They have trouble with their digestion and all that stuff. You know, if you've got mercury in your teeth, you're running a constant level of an antiseptic through your intestine that kills off your normal bugs. Well, many people realize that when you take an antibiotic, you kill off the normal bugs and you end up with dystrophic bacteria. Well, what if you had mercury fillings? That means you're doing that same problem day in, day out.
But if the mercury will kill the bugs, won't it have an effect on your cellular structure? Won't it have an effect on your brain, which is your most precious possession?
Yeah, absolutely. And 80% of the mercury ends up in the kidney, and the rest of it, about 1%, ends up in the brain. The rest of it's in the liver, heart, and it causes irregular heartbeat. It damages the liver, and in the brain is where you get the majority of the symptoms. Isn't that interesting? 1% of the mercury is in the brain, and you get the majority of symptoms, which are neurological. And so mercury in the brain has been linked to Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, and MS, multiple sclerosis. So what's the commonality of all those diseases? Is they all have to do with the way the body is controlled by the brain. And so, yes, mercury's been called a perfect pesticide for man. Here's a substance that many animals, like fish, accumulate in their muscle, and that humans accumulate in their brain. And so it can, you know, while it doesn't appear to damage your fish, it can make you really damaged.
Well, of course, the difference between a smart human being and a dumb human being is a great deal of difference between a smart fish and a dumb fish.
Yeah, well, I guess that's why the fish got in the boat, isn't it?
But, the thing I think that's really so frightening is we talked to Dr. Boyd Haley, who is a professor of chemistry. Do you remember what state he's from?
Kentucky. Well, he was born in Wyoming, and he's a patriot. He fought in Vietnam, but he's the chairman of the Department of Chemistry at the University of Kentucky.
And of course, Dr. Boyd Haley believes very, very strongly that the dental fillings, the mercury from dental fillings, have a definite relationship to Alzheimer's disease. Now, some people apparently are much more sensitive to mercury than others. Some people can tolerate it better than others. But if you have a predisposition to sensitivity to mercury and you have dental fillings, there seems to be a very definite causal relationship. And yet, nobody seems to want to talk about that.
No, actually Boyd has mapped out the gene of why certain individuals are more sensitive to mercury than others, and it's the gene that controls cholesterol in the brain, not in your blood, but the brain. It's called the APOE gene, and there's three different genotypes, 2, 3, and 4, and that the people that have the correct or the best genotype excrete mercury very well, and the people that have the weakest genotype don't excrete it at all, zero, none, nada. So, that there are some people that can apparently take a bath in the stuff and have no apparent harm. That's why epidemiological studies will not find this problem, because there's only about 5% of the population that are extremely vulnerable, and there's probably another 25% to 40% that are kind of vulnerable. And then, here's some people that are not particularly sensitive to it at all. And so when you try to just, look at the general population with what's called an epidemiological study, where you say, I noticed the dentist didn't seem to have that much problem, that's not a good study. But if you actually do focus down on the dentist, they have a much higher heart attack problem, they have a much higher divorce rate, they have a much higher suicide rate, they have a drug abuse rate, they have a whole host of problems that are neurological in order. Their behavior is abnormal, and on and on. If you look at the insurance, they have the highest utilization of their health insurance of any group on the planet. So all of a sudden, when you start tuning in on specific things about the people who are known to be exposed to mercury, that's your dentist, your dental assistant. Dental assistants have a 40% decline in their ability to conceive children. And this was Stan, you're familiar with the term case controlled. And this is the gold standard in peer-reviewed medical science. And they did a case-controlled study of California dental assistants, where they specifically identified dental assistants, age match. They measured the amount of cigarette smoking, all the other risk factors for infertility, and they showed that there was a 40% decline in fertility of dental assistants if they worked with mercury over their paired social equal if they did not work with mercury. I think that's a crime.
Now, is that study posted up on your webpage, or how?
I don't know if the name of the author is Rowland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D. I think it was 1994 that they did the study, so it's easy to find with Google.
1994, and that's the dental assistants.
Yes.
Now, in my understanding, one of the highest groups to commit suicide are dentists. Is that right?
That's correct. And mercury causes depression. What do you think? Is there a relationship between depression and suicide?
Well, they used to say they're mad as a hatter, and the reason that the hatters went mad is because they worked with mercury. We'll be back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy. We're talking about the toxic effects of mercury, not only for the patients, but for the doctor and for the dentist and for the people who work in the dental offices. And I think that this idea that certainly dental assistants have a 40% greater incident of, is that miscarriage or just getting pregnant that there's the difference in?
Decline in fertility is how they expressed it, is so that their ability to conceive a child. These were people that were trying to conceive a child, and the 40% were unable to. 40% decline in their ability. And I'm just going to look here in my database and see if I have Roland popping up. And so, you know, you say, how can this controversy go on for all these years? And the answer is really very simple. Is that there's a trade association that's not promoting it. And what they do is that they have a death grip on agencies like your National Institute of Dental Research. It's now called the Dental and Cranial Facial Research. And that about a year, they've been getting a lot of bad press, you know, because more and more countries, I think they're up to 12 countries now, have prohibited the use of mercury in vulnerable subsets, and that's basically a woman or a child. Us guys can still have them, you know. But, you know, so what do they do? They put together what's called a so-called expert committee. Not a single person on this committee had ever published any research about mercury and its effects from dental amalgam. God, could you have an expert in airplanes if nobody knew how to fly or ever built an airplane or didn't know anything about airplanes? You know, like, this is their so-called expert committee. Who put this together? The National Institute of Dental and Cranial Facial Research. And they put this wonderful research together, and then they sent it out, and they didn't send it out for bid, they sent it out to a specific organization, and the LSRO, and said, what we need is we need this. Here's what we want you to conclude, and here's how much we'll pay you. And that's what they did. Who's LSRO? They have over and over again come up with exact conclusions that organizations wanted them to, like, you know, smoking's okay. And so that these people knew what they were doing, and that this is under investigation right now by Senator Lautenberg.
Right, sounds right.
Yeah, and so Lautenberg is actually investigating how they let this contract out in the first place. And that but basically it came out as amalgams are perfectly wonderful, yada, yada, yada. Does it have any basis in fact? No, not a bit.
Well, now, did you say that a number of countries have outlawed this?
Yeah, Sweden. I think in the next few months it's drug on for since 87. But in 87, the expert committee said, from a toxicological point of view, dental amalgam was unacceptable restorative material, and alternatives should be used as soon as possible. Well, the dentist said, "Oh, we don't know how to do anything else. That's all we can do. That's the only material we know how to use." Well, you know. Would you go flying on the Southwest Airline if all the pilots said, well, only airplane we know how to fly has to have a propeller on the front? You'd think, well, you know, get better for pilots or something, you know? It's like, but anyway, so it drug on for another, 14 years because the dentist claimed that they didn't know how to use anything except mercury, but I didn't use mercury for the last 25 years, so I don't know. I guess maybe there's a difference in the training. But anyway, that's this year, I think, is the last year. You can still use it in mentally retarded children, disabled children, because, you know...
Hold that just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Dr. David Kennedy about the danger of, danger of mercury. And he's pointing out, of course, that there's a 40% decrease in fertility and dental assistance. Why? Because, of course, they're working with mercury. And this was pointed out in a paper by Roland back in 1999, and we certainly want to get the copies of that. And are there any other similar studies that show the toxic effects on mercury, either on the dental assistants or on the doctor? On the dentists themselves, other than those rather frightening statistics of the suicide rate in dentists and their heart attacks and their other physical disabilities?
Yes, quite a few other studies. One of the first lectures I gave in Europe to the American Dental Society of Europe was the effect of mercury on dental personnel, and there were a half a dozen studies back then on dental personnel showing infertility and birth defects. There was a whole conference on it back in Glasgow back in 1980. So this is not new research. It's just the when you look for the gold standard, a case-controlled study is probably the best, and that was the one that Roland did, and then published in the Toxicologist, the Journal of the Society for Toxicology.
And well, but see, the average individual doesn't know about these studies, and I'll have to admit that, of course, you know, I'm interested in this subject, but we need to have all of these studies available so that we can get them to, to people who are going to dentists, and they can get to the dentist and say, don't you realize you're risking your health and the health of the people in your office as well as your patients? I don't think the average doctor believes that. If they saw the studies, maybe they might just start thinking and realize they've been lied to.
They might do that, but, you know, I have to caution patients, the people that, you know, might go to the dentist and say, you know, these mercury fillings, I'm really concerned about them, because, you know, they'll come in with, you know, it's like the bomb disposal team. If they show up with a hammer to get rid of the bomb, you don't want to be around. And so if you grind that mercury filling up into little tiny pieces, remember that the daily dose of... maximum daily dose of mercury is 10 micrograms from sources other than air, according to the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. That's called their minimum risk level. 10 micrograms. Remember that figure, because there's 750,000 micrograms in a single filling. So if you had 10 fillings removed, you got 7,500,000 micrograms of mercury potentially coming up your nose, going down your throat, spread all over your skin, your body. And so the Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology has developed protocols that protect the patient and the dentist from mercury exposure during these removal procedures. But if they don't follow them, and many people have been so blasted by getting mercury, you know, 8, 10, 12, 8, 15 fillings out in a matter of a day or two, that they've been injured permanently. I know of one lady that developed a perfectly healthy lady, 50 years old, went in and said, I'm really concerned about these mercury fillings. Dennis said, well, have a seat, I'll take them out. And he drilled out 18 fillings in 2 days. She shortly fell ill, and she developed a permanent neurological impairment. It's considered Parkinson's, but, you know, it came 2 days after having 18 fillings out. Well, what are the symptoms of Parkinson's? Well, exactly the same as mercury poisoning. You know, you shake, you quiver, you have tremor, your body's not controlled. Yes, and neurological impairment does result from having inappropriate amalgams removed. So even the American Dental Association said one time that you should leave those fillings alone, because if you take them out, you'll be exposed to more mercury than if you leave them alone. And that's absolutely correct if you follow the normal dental protocol for amalgam removal. And I'm encouraging everybody in the listing area to not rush to your dentist and have your mercury fillings removed. That's not a good idea. That will definitely give you a huge dose of mercury.
Well, now, how do you take it out? What do you do to prevent both contamination of the patient and of the dentist?
Well, the first thing is you have to understand that you're removing a piece of very toxic material. The second thing you have to understand is you have to understand the nature of mercury. Heat makes mercury spread. And so that means that the filling has to be removed under a steady stream of cold water. And the third thing you have to understand is the toxic form of mercury, the most toxic form of mercury, other than methyl mercury, is elemental mercury vapor. And that's the form that comes off when you grind on a filling. So what you have to do is you have to put a great big vacuum right next to the tooth. And it has to sit there from the moment you start drilling on that tooth until every single scrap of amalgam is out of the tooth and the tooth is completely cleaned up and there's not a scrap seen anywhere. Then, and only then, can you take the vacuum away from the tooth. And to protect the patient, you need to have alternative breathing so that their nose is not exposed to any of those fumes.
Well, then how do you breathe? I mean, you have to breathe through your mouth, don't you?
No, you have to breathe through your nose.
Okay.
You're not a horse.
Oh, I see, okay.
you got a nose.
All right, fine. In other words, but you got to protect the nose from those fumes.
Under positive pressure, yes. You have to have air that's flowing into the nose.
Okay, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Dr. David Kennedy talking about the dangers of mercury, what you can do about it. Ladies and gentlemen, the American people are being poisoned. You're one of them. You better find out what's going on. And we'll be back here in just a moment with David Kennedy. Well, this is Dr. David. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening, Dr. David Kennedy. Our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And of course, we'd love to get your thoughts on what we're talking about. But the subject comes up then of the danger of dental amalgam. And David, are there any studies that show that a pregnant woman who has a lot of dental cavities, pardon me, a lot of dental fillings, that a child in her womb can be damaged by this mercury in her mouth?
Yes, there are a number of studies. One of the studies that the Academy of Oral Medicine Toxicology conducted a number of years ago was that we looked at pregnant sheep, because a sheep is about the same body weight as a human, and that we were able to measure the amount of mercury in the blood of the fetus when we put mercury fillings in the sheep, and that there were enough to make our Academy concluded that, you know, this is of considerable concern, because the level went right up within a matter of hours when you put mercury fillings in the the mercury began to show up in the fetus. But in addition, is that when the studies of pregnancy and mercury transferring to the fetus, they found that there's a number of studies, and one of the recent ones you mentioned, Boyd Haley, was one he conducted in New Zealand with Godfrey, and they showed that the baby's first haircut, if the mother had a lot of fillings or had dental work during pregnancy, there was a lot of mercury in the baby's hair. If it was a normal baby, they also showed that the amount of mercury in the mother's hair was proportional to the number of fillings in the mother's teeth. But they also showed something else that I was talking earlier about, people that are genetically predisposed to developing illnesses like Alzheimer's, that they showed that the autistic babies had almost no mercury in their hair. In other words, hair is the way mercury leaves the body. And then the autistic baby, regardless of the amount of exposure they had from the mother's teeth or even from vaccinations, the baby could not excrete mercury. And that these, by and large, were babies that were of the susceptible or the vulnerable genotype. And so that's a nicely done study, really nails down the issue, is that you can look at specific genotypes and show that there are vulnerable subsets of the population who are exceptionally susceptible to the toxic effects of mercury. One of the things that I think people need to understand is that Lawrence Tabak, who's the head of the NIBCR, complained and said suggesting that there's a conflict of interest in having dentists participate in research into this area makes no more sense than having oncologists should not participate in cancer research. Well, wait a minute. Dentists don't treat.
Go ahead, right ahead. Impairment. Now, our guest this evening is Dr. David Kennedy, and we're basically talking about the fact that there is the mercury that is in the mother's fillings, actually, and she's pregnant, that mercury will go into the child. They've actually done studies with sheep where they actually put mercury fillings into sheep and found that very, very shortly thereafter, of course, that mercury was beginning to concentrate in the blood of the fetus, of the sheep fetus. And then, of course, the other thing that they found was that if a child is autistic, there's no mercury in the hair. Ordinarily, there's mercury in the hair of a newborn child. But if that child has the gene that prevents them from excreting mercury, in other words, they begin to concentrate it in the brain or elsewhere in the body, then, of course, there's no essentially no mercury in the hair, which means that the child is incapable of excreting it, and they have this genetic predisposition to autism. I thought that was a fascinating finding.
It was fascinating, and you know, the point that I was just making before the break is that Tabak, the director of the NIDCR, says that dentists should be allowed to participate in these studies, and I disagree entirely. Is it no dentist in the world can diagnose any of the diseases that mercury causes? You're not trained as a dentist to diagnose or treat neurological impairment. We're not trained to deliver children. We're not neonatal specialists. We're not neurologists. We have no training, and if you walked in my dental office and said, you know, Doc Kennedy, I've got this kind of shaky arm here, and I've got this tremor here, and I've got this metallic taste in my mouth, all of those are symptoms of mercury poisoning. You know, do you think my mercury fillings could be causing that? What I have to tell you, by law, I have to tell you that
Yes, that those might be, but as a dentist, I cannot diagnose nor treat mercury poisoning. So for treatment of mercury poisoning, I have to send you to everybody from your chiropractor to your acupuncturist to your physician to your toxicologist to your neighbor. But a dentist cannot tell you you're mercury poisoning. You're mercury poisoned. That's not in the purview of our license. And so, you know, for the NIDCR to ostensibly conduct research about, you know, review, research review is what they call it. And what they do is they put together, you know, we're gonna review the last 10 years of research. And they collect the last 10 years of research, most of it showing that mercury was causing terrible harm wherever it went. And then they have these people that have never conducted any research, can't diagnose nor treat any diseases, and say, well, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. Oh, this is okay. So if it was published in the Journal of the American Dental Association, it's okay. But if it's published in the Journal of Neurotoxicology or FASB, then it's not okay. So they basically just select the research that they agree with and say it's okay, and they give their stamp of approval. That's not correct, and they should not have people that don't know anything about mercury on these committees.
All right, fine. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. David Kennedy. We're talking about the danger of mercury fillings. Now, this is certainly one of the major forms of contamination and poisoning of our children and our people. The other, of course, is the vaccinations that they give us with thimerosal in them. That you'll find it in the flu vaccine up until recently. You found it in all childhood vaccines, and it may still be in childhood vaccines. I don't know that we can necessarily trust the CDC or the NIH or the vaccine manufacturers to be telling us the truth. And one of these days where we're going to get somebody to get some of these vaccines and actually test them to find out what the level of mercury still is in there. Because, of course, they've put it in for many years. It is, I believe, directly related to the explosion of the incidence of autism and neurological developmental abnormalities in our children to the point where today 1 in 6 children in the United States has some sort of a neurodevelopmental abnormality, according to Dr. Mark Geyer, who's a researcher and looked into this extensively. But do you think that the mercury poisoning, pulling fillings in our children's teeth, has an effect on their minds as well, David?
Of course it does, Sam. It's going to hit them up the side of the head with a permanent neurological poison. You know, it takes 27 years to get half the mercury out of the teeth. Think about it. You know, you got an 8-year-old child, he hasn't had sealants on his teeth, he goes to the dentist, and the dentist is on welfare, and he says, well, what you need are these welfare fillings, these poor folk fillings. And they grind holes in the middle of the teeth, and they put in 750 milligrams in 4 teeth. I know one study by Sellers found that if the child had four fillings, he had his breath was 50 micrograms of mercury after chewing a piece of gum. And let me explain to the listeners that 50 micrograms of mercury in the cubic per cubic meter of air, if you had a hazardous waste dump that was that high, you cannot have an adult worker working there, even if you're paying them $100 an hour. It doesn't make any difference. The OSHA is going to close that because that's above the level that an adult can be legally exposed to if he's wearing a space suit and has a respirator. And yet, here's the child with four fillings breathing out exactly that same level. And what did the ADA say? Well, children don't breathe in through their mouth. Well, I certainly hope they don't, because, you know, if they did, they'd get a hell of a dose of mercury. But, you know, so it's absolutely insane. The numbers don't add up. And that's the thing. That's why they don't ever want to debate this thing about numbers, body burden, milligrams of daily dose, and that sort of stuff. They don't want to carry on these kind of discussions because, you know, it fails immediately when you start talking about the permissible dose of mercury or the alleged dose that you receive from your fillings, because, you know, it's enormous. It's not tiny, it's enormous.
Well, let's go to John, who's calling us here from Tennessee. Hi, John, how are you doing?
Fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much for putting Dr. Kennedy on. I've read his book, and it's an honor to speak with him, and I bought his book for my family.
Now, was that his book on fluoride, or was that his book on gum disease?
How to Save Your Teeth.
Okay.
Well, thank you for saying so. I wrote that for you. You know,
it's a great book. Reception isn't too good, so you may have covered this, but I was wondering if there's any danger from the Novocaine injections that dentists use.
I didn't cover that in my book. Yes, there is some danger from that. There are alternatives to the Novocaine. Novocaine breaks down into an aniline analog, and Dr. Stan will tell you that aniline has been known to be a carcinogen for more than a century, so it wouldn't make any sense to inject people with a carcinogen. And that the Novocaine, Xylocaine, Carbocaine, all those earlier anesthetics do break down into a toxic substance, and there is a new one, I believe it's just one at this point in time, that's on the market, and I'm sorry I can't pull it out of my gray matter at the moment what the name of it is, but there is one that does not become a carcinogen, and so be sure and request that one, and if you can't find it, I'll scuffle around in my database here and see if I can find it for you.
Is it lidocaine?
No, lidocaine is the same breakdown product. Lidocaine, xylocaine, carbocaine, novocaine, those all. I went up to the drug people at one of the dental meetings. Astra is the drug company. I went up to the and I just wandered up the counter and I said, "Do you have any local anesthetics?" And they're the makers of, I think, lidocaine. And that I asked them, "Do you have any anesthetics that don't break down into a carcinogen?" And he didn't have to go ask his boss or anybody. He just said, no. They knew. And, you know, heck, I've been a dentist for 25 years before I found that out. But, you know, the 25-year-old guy that was working at the front desk, he knew they didn't have one that didn't break into a carcinogen. I was shocked.
Anything else, John?
That's all. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thank you so very much. And, of course, somebody did ask the other evening, David, how they could get hold of your book, what the name of it was. And do you sell that yourself, or is it available through Amazon?
It's available. You can get it
Amazon.com.
Amazon.com. And let me whip up an 800 number here.
What's the name of the book?
How to Save Your Teeth with Toxic-Free Preventive Dentistry.
How to Save Your Teeth?
Yes, with Toxic-Free Preventive Dentistry. And there's an 800 number here and for Goldmine Natural Foods that I'll find for you in a second. Let's go on to something else.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you know that we find then that, of course, the having the fillings put in and chewing gum, I suppose anything you chew or anything you put in your mouth very, very hot will actually cause this mercury to come out. And actually, we carry a video. It's called, I don't know if you know it, it's called Uninformed Consent, but they have a picture of the so-called smoking tooth there. And apparently you hold the tooth up on a pair of forceps, and I think it's about 105 degrees, but that's, of course, about the temperature you'd get with a good hot cup of coffee.
No, a good hot cup of coffee is about 145 degrees.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And every 10 degrees of raise in temperature, there's a doubling of the vapor pressure. But, yes, I made a video similar to that. Here's that 800 number for you. The book, it's 800-475-3663, and that's the Goldmine Natural Foods. They have organic foods also that don't have pesticides, and that Gene Richardson runs a company for the last 20 years and has carried that book since it came out, actually.
All right, fine. Well, maybe we can do another program on that some other evening, but I'd sort of like to stay on this subject of mercury. Our telephone number again, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Dr. David Kennedy, and we're simply talking about the toxic effect of the mercury fillings that the dentist puts in your mouth. Now, of course, they can use ceramic fillings and other things, but the dentist is constantly told that there's absolutely nothing to worry about, that people who are against the mercury fillings are simply some sort of extremists or quacks. But I think more and more people are really beginning to question the wisdom of this. Do you have this feeling that the people are beginning to get a little bit smarter than the dentist?
You know, I'm sorry to say that one of the ways I found out about fluoride mercury is my patients taught me. You know, that I think that... one of the problems with dental education is you end up convinced that the people that instructed you knew what they were talking about. But, you know, for people that have the ability to listen and do their own research, is that after 10 or 20 years in private practice, you understand that most of the people that were trying to teach you something about dentistry were very confused about the actual facts that are available. Gum disease is an infection. We were taught to treat it like surgery. You know, you're a surgeon, Dr. Stan. You know, when did surgery for infections go out? About the Civil War, wasn't it? 160 years ago. So you know, it's like crazy to be cutting gums off. You know, it only makes them worse. Tooth decay is an infection. You know, what do? They cut a hole in the tooth. Well, that's stupid again. You know, if you got an infection, kill the bug that's causing it.
All right, let's go to Mark calling from Michigan. Hi, Mark. Did you have a question?
Yes. Just a quick question. First of all, I'd like to thank you guys for covering this material.
Well, that's why what we do here, you know, 5 hours a day, but 2 hours there, in Michigan. And I'm so glad you're listening. I hope you'll encourage other people to listen to the program.
I'm doing that.
Now, yep. are you in Flint or in Detroit?
Just south of Detroit.
Okay, fine.
Yep. My question is, say I get the mercury removed from my teeth, what then goes in place of it? What's recommended there? Are there different options? Or?
Yeah, it depends on how big the hole is. Basically, if it's a small hole, that you know, I just fill it back up with a material called composite. It's very similar to concrete. You know, it's a plastic binder, and the filler is glass. So about 80% glass, about 20% of a binder. And so, you know, whatever kind of chuck hole you got in your tooth, you can fill it up. That's okay if there's plenty of tooth left. If there's a pretty good sized hole in the tooth, you can use that same material, but it has to be baked in an oven. Those are called indirect composite inlays. If it's bigger than that, you can use some of the more modern materials that are available for a lab process material. And you know, if it's really a big mess, you can use gold. I have no objection to gold as long as there's no mercury in the mouth. Is that gold makes more mercury come off of the teeth, not less. So you have to get rid of the mercury and then let the mercury leave and then use the gold. But you can fix teeth with a lot of different materials. But I like composites and I like the gold material. I'm not opposed to a gold. I don't like the nickel. I don't like materials that have beryllium. And so, you know, be sure and get a good list of the materials that they intend to use. And there is actually a test where you can measure your body's reactivity to a whole variety of dental materials. It's called the Clifford Reactivity Test, a blood test. They're looking for the IgG element in the blood. If you put a substance together with your blood and it turns into cottage cheese, it's probably not that good. And that if you put it together and it stays smooth and clear, then it's probably okay. You're not forming an antibody to it.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Mark?
No, the test again, you said Clifford?
Clifford, C-L-I-F-F-O-R-D, Clifford.
Okay,
Clifford.
Thanks so much, Mark. And
thank
let's go
you.
To Melanie calling from New York State. Hi, Melanie. What part of New York State are you calling from?
Central New York.
New York, okay, fine. Do you have a question?
My brother's been diagnosed.
Could you speak up just a little louder, please?
My brother's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease.
Right.
And it just came to mind listening to your program that he had a lot of dental work done, a lot of fillings put in right about the time, not long before we noticed these changes. And I was wondering if he had those fillings picked out, would we see a reverse of the effects maybe? Or?
All right. The question was, David, I don't know if you're
going to... I was barely in the room.
Basically, Melanie said that her brother had developed Parkinson's disease shortly after he'd had a large number of fillings put in. Now, assuming those were mercury fillings, we don't know, but we're assuming that they are. Would there be any benefit of taking those fillings out?
Well, I wouldn't have a mercury filling in my office much less my mouth, but the problem with taking them out is if they don't follow the correct protocol so that the patient isn't exposed to more, that they can make him worse.
Right.
There are cases where people have developed Parkinson's from just having the mercury fillings removed. So,
could you tell, there is a group of doctors who are certified to do that. What is that group, and how would possibly Melanie get in touch with those and find out if there is one in her area?
You can go to the webpage of the IAOMT, and I'll give it to IAOMT. It stands for International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology.
IAOMT webpage.
And the webpage is IAMT.org, O-R-G.
Okay.
And that, you know, there's a place where you can put in your zip code or your area code or something like that, or you can send an email to the office and look for a dentist that has a
I tell people, you know, there are a lot of members of the IMT. There's a step up from just being a member, which is called a fellow, where you've actually, you know, gone through and established that you know the protocols of the IMT. Find somebody to fellow the IMT and then consult with them.
No, there would be any possibility this could help him as far as the condition is concerned.
Yes, very much. Only, you know, do it carefully or it could make him worse.
All right, fine. So does that answer your question, Melanie?
Yes, thank you very much. Yes,
thank you so very much. Okay, fine. We'll be talking to Mary from New York very shortly, and then Mary from Covina in California. So we'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up this evening's program. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. We've got Mary from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Hi. Good.
Thanks. Speak a little louder.
Yeah. I have just gotten 4 dental crowns, and I noticed, to my chagrin, that they have metal coating that went right into up against my gums.
Now, what sort of metal is it?
I don't know.
Are they silver or are they gold?
Silver.
Okay, fine.
But I just, I was also wondering if there's a likelihood that as we get older and our body can't throw off the toxins, that's why there's a higher incidence of Down syndrome with older mothers because of the number of fillings.
Is there any relationship between the fillings and Down syndrome, David? And is
the fillings? No, not that I know of. But you know, interestingly, you know, Stan and I both love to talk about fluoride. There are a number of studies showing that younger women having Down syndrome babies, where the 4 to 7 chromosomes are there. Is definitely associated to fluoridation. Water fluoridation does damage the chromosomes of the younger mothers. They couldn't show an increase in the older mothers, but definitely in the younger mothers they could show a dramatic increase in the number of babies born with Down syndrome. So in the older mother, you're probably correct. Is it the lifelong exposure? You know, if you're 50 years old having a baby, lifelong exposure to all the poisons that are around, lead, mercury, fluoride, whatever, certainly could damage your reproductive capacity. But when you get 20, 23-year-old women having Down syndrome babies, that's basically the fluoridation problem.
Yeah.
So,
well, my 97-year-old aunt had all her gums cut out because they said they were infected.
Yeah,
I thought
know.
That was bizarre.
Well, that's a bacterial infection. It's caused by specific germs. Should be treated with antiseptics and in some cases antibiotics.
We'll be doing another program here real soon, Mary, where we're actually going to address that problem.
Yes, thank you so much for the book. I'm going to get it.
God bless you. Bye-bye. Let's go to Mary calling from Covina. Mary, quick question. We're almost out of time.
I've had 9 mercury fillings, and 3 months ago I had 4 of them taken out, and then a month later 2-3 more, and now I'm due to get the last 2. And the reason I spread them out was so that I could try to help my body detoxify itself, because I was not protected from the mercury that would be released when the fillings were taken out. Is that good? I mean, one of the things I'm taking is alpha-lipoic acid and NAC.
All right, let's get Dr. Kennedy's thoughts on that.
Well, it's certainly better than having them all out in one day, but, you know, it would be to me, if the dentist is willing to take your money, and they're not willing to follow the protocols that have been established in the scientific literature to protect you, they're not ethical people, in my opinion.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're just wrapping up the program with Dr. David Kennedy. And Mary, of course, there are specific protocols, you know, where they should be sucking out that mercury very, very specifically and putting cold water under the tooth. There is an organization, this organization of dentists who specialize in taking that out. But I think what you've done is probably pretty smart, as you certainly shouldn't have them all taken out at one time, because you could really get a toxic dose.
And hold your breath when they're drilling.
All right. Okay, thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, fine. Well, we're out of time, David. I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and I hope you'll come back with us again, and we can actually go into the background of dental gum disease, and of course how this should be approached, and the sort of toothpaste you ought to be taking. And of course, you go to the average dental surgeon today, and he's going to look at you and going to say, "We're going to have to take out some of that bone there. That's the only way we're going to be able to solve the problem. We're going to have to take out the gum. We're going to have to take out the bone, and that's how we're going to solve the problem." And you know, I've had dentists telling me this is absolute madness, but you know, when the dental surgeon says this is how you do it, well, I think that maybe we better learn a little bit more than the dental surgeons do. God bless you. Thanks so very much, David. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time we would like to suggest that there is information out there that you really need to have. Certainly, I think Dr. Russell Blaylock's book, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, actually deals with the problems of fluoride and of mercury and aspartame, and then good general nutrition, which is so important as far as your general health is concerned. And so if you're going to get one book dealing with many of the issues we talk about, Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have an excellent book. Pardon me, we have an excellent four-tape set on mercury, two interviews with Dr. Boyd Haley, and two interviews with Dr. Mark Geyer. We have a video, it's called Uninformed Consent, and there you'll actually see the smoking tooth. You'll actually see a tooth heated to 105 degrees, and you'll see the mercury vapors coming off of that. They have a special mercury screen, and you can actually photograph this. And then, of course, it goes into so many of the hearings and so many of the lies that have been told about dental fillings, and, of course, the background, of course, as far as dental, as far as mercury poisoning and what's happened in certain areas where there's been increased mercury in the water, and it got into the shellfish. And there's a city over in Japan where most of the people got mercury poisoning. It's really a very well done film. We recommend The Smoking Tooth. The name of the video is Uninformed Consent. So the four tape set on mercury, the video Uninformed Consent, and the book Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life are available. If you'd like more information, call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a copy of this evening's discussion, this will be available as well, and by calling that same telephone number. And then we hope that many of you out there will want to get the videos. Megiddo 1, which of course is the story of a biblical prophecy set against the background of what's going on today, World War I, World War II, and World War III, which we've already entered. Megiddo 2, of course, is the story of the occult influence in society from the Garden of Eden right up to today. And, of course, I have a small part in that where we take you into the background of the Georgia Guidestones. We take you into the background of the Madame Blavatsky. And it's very professionally done. That's Megiddo 2. And then, of course, we have They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. If you have children or grandchildren, you need to get that video and let them see it. The number 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our website, radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com. You can listen to us 5 hours a day there. And, of course, till Monday when we'll be with you again. Good night, and may the Lord be with you.